All right, everybody, welcome to Blue to Gold Cat Out of the Bag webinar. My name is Mike Boone, and I'm going to be chatting with you all for about an hour or so talking about cat out of the bag searches. Glad to have you all here. A couple housekeeping things when we start here. Just know that most everything we're going to talk about tonight and most everything we talk about at Blue to Gold is constitutional Fourth Amendment, kind of across the board information. Just always pay attention to your laws and standard operating procedures. You guys might be more restrictive in what you can and cannot do things. So just pay attention to those things in some of those states where you guys know it's a little tougher to be cops in, but you still do a great job out there. If you have any doubts, push it up the chain. All you supervisors out there, that's what you make the big bucks for. So if you're not sure and you got time to do so, push it up the chain. And this class is legal education, not legal advice. So just know that we're giving you the best information we can out there to make good decisions, get it right every single time. But your prosecutors out there may have a difference of opinions, and that's fine. But we're just going to give you the best information we can give you. All right. So what are we going to talk about tonight? Privacy to start off with here, and then something that we call cat out of the bag. And it'll make a little more sense here in a few minutes if you're not familiar with it just quite yet. What do we got here? Your firefighters need to rest, right? For sure. All right, so let's jump into it here. Privacy. When we talk about the Fourth Amendment, right? That's that foundationally, it's what it's there for. It's for a person to retreat into their own home and be free from government intrusion, to have that privacy component there. Protects persons, houses, papers, and effects from who? You all, right? The government and police out there. And so, it's a realistic expectation to have out there is a to have privacy in what we do. And we're going to talk about what the heck that means here. So foundationally, where we get this privacy measure from is a case called CATS. You'll hear us talk about it all the time, this reasonable expectation of privacy. And it all starts from in the area of like Hollywood Boulevard back in the 60s, a guy named Charles Katz. And he was a bookie, right? He would make his rounds and kind of a creature of habit a little bit. He would go every day, walk down from his apartment and go out to a phone booth and call, I think, the Boston area, out into Florida, and he would place those bets, right? Placing those bets. And he would do it through this phone booth. And we've made this joke quite a bit here at Blue to Gold. And some of you, I'm sure, are some younger cops out there. And just for clarification, because I want everybody to be on the same page out here, is this phone booth concept here, right? We like to call it the first generation iPhone out there, right? You can actually go out there, you put money in it, and you can make some phone calls to other people out there. And who else used the phone booth for my superhero fans? What else is the phone booth used for out there? Someone very famous could change his clothes very quickly in it. Superman, there you go, right? Oh, Clark Kent. Oh, yeah. So, right, yeah, it depends which side of the phone booth, right? Clark Kent goes in, Superman comes out. So that's what Katz would do. He would go out to the phone booth, right? He would make his phone call. He would shut the door behind him. He would speak, not real loud. And as the story goes, at times he would even do this. He put his hand over his mouth when he was speaking with someone. Was he a super paranoid person? Was he a little bit OCD about this? Or was he concerned about the FBI investigating him? And he was. All right, he believed that he was being investigated by the FBI, and that's true. The FBI was wanting to get some charges on him, so they're like, all right, he goes out to this phone booth, can't hear what he's saying, so let's put a little microphone, a recording device on the outside of the phone booth. So they capture the sound waves that are coming out of there. They can't hear the other side of the conversation, but they can hear Katz. All right? They can hear Katz and what he's talking about. They get enough information to indict him, they arrest him. And we're off and running. We're going to the United States Supreme Court. Well, Katz is like, hang on a second now. You don't get to listen to my phone calls out there. That's that's an invasion of my privacy. And the FBI is like, oh no, yeah, okay, fine, but that ain't your phone booth, right? That's not yours. And all we're doing is listening to the sound waves coming out of that phone booth. So I don't see your problem here, Katz. And so the Supreme Court takes a look at this, like, hold up here a second. If if we are cool with the government listening to sound waves coming out of the phone booth, well, they had this forethought, this, without really knowing, thinking about the technology in this future. Think about now, we've got, laser microphones that can be pointed, from a long distance and hear what you're saying. We've got, thermal imaging that you can see, people moving around inside their homes, and your home is the castle, right? So when they looked at this, they're like, all right, cats, yeah, you don't own this. You don't have a property interest in this here, but you're right. You do have a expectation of privacy in this conversation. And it'd be a different story if he left that door open and he was talking real loud, speaking boastfully about it here, and anybody walking by could hear it. But the fact that they used this microphone to hear it, that was the birth of our expectation of privacy type searches. And they said, cats, you do have some. You do have expectation of privacy in that phone booth. And when we look at this, there's kind of a couple ways to, in our, cop minds here, is two parts to this expectation of privacy. One, did the suspect have an expectation of privacy? Did cats think that, you know what, when I go in there, the government shouldn't be listening to my phone call? That's part one. Part two is, would society also consider it to be reasonable? Would they also think, okay, I agree with that. And you got to have both parts of this. Okay. You got to have both parts. When we look at this, both are required. But this could be a little bit of a challenging test out there in the field at times. So here's kind of how we like to put this in your mind here at Blue to Gold. How about this 100-person test? And if you look, this 100 people isn't a room full of cops, all right? Because we might have some biases at times. We might think, well, if somebody arrested them that I work with, they're probably guilty. I mean, we would never think like that, right? And you don't want it to be a room full of crooks. They might have their own biases saying, yeah, they're probably not guilty. What'd they do? Here we want just kind of a cross-section of society, all right? Random people from all walks of life gathered in this room together and say, hey, society, how do you feel about this? Do you think that the government should be able to put a listening device outside the phone booth, even though you don't own that phone booth, and listen to your conversation? How do you feel about that, society? And what do you think they'd say? Probably don't like it, right? I can't imagine most people would do so. Hey, society, is it cool if the police take a drone and they fly it real low into your backyard with a camera on it and they start zooming around in your backyard, just kind of peeking through your window, see what you got going on? Are you cool with that, society? I think not, right? So just in your minds, kind of ask yourself this question: what would 100 people say? And this, I think, will give you kind of where you're wanting to go in this measure of subjective thinking, expecting privacy, and objectively thinking, yes, society also agrees with it. So that's kind of where this privacy concept comes from, this reasonable expectation of privacy. It's got to be reasonable, right? You can't subjectively think, I'm gonna go smoke some crack on the park bench today. Would society objectively feel like, yeah, I'm cool with that? Well, depends where you're at. In some of these states, maybe the Pacific Northwest, maybe that's cool these days, but for the most part, objectively, that's not a reasonable expectation of privacy. So we're going to take this foundation, this kind of this privacy and this expectation of privacy, and move it into private searches. Now, as we all know, right, the Constitution protects, the people from the government, right? The government and its agents. And we'll talk about what that means here a little bit more. But there is no constitutional violation when it comes to private searches, no matter how unreasonable it is, how potentially even criminal it may be at times, there is no constitutional violation. So the Fourth Amendment does not restrict private actors, no matter how unreasonable their actions are. So let's talk about a case. This took place out in Atlantic City. And this guy was playing gambling in there, and they believed him, security believed him to be counting cards. And while not necessarily illegal, from what I understand, it's just highly frowned upon because, well, the advantage goes to the player and not the casino. And I live out here in Vegas, and as you can tell, there's some big casinos out here that are not built on winners. So they want this guy out of here, right? So the security goes, they grab him up, he's got a bag with him, and they're like, hey, we're gonna trespass him. So they take him back to the security office. And they get him back there. One of the security guards searches him, searches his bag, and they find some cocaine in his pocket. And they call the cops. Cops show up and they say, "Hey, here's why we got this guy here, and this is what we found on him," right? They got this cocaine, and they hand it over to him. So we got in this guy's pocket and they arrest him. And the question is, can we, the cops, the government, can we take that cocaine that was recovered by security and use it against him to charge him? What do you guys think? I like the G2G from B2G. Tristan, you should add that in there. Love it. Tons of yeses. Yes. G2Gs, right? You're absolutely right. Yes, we can. And the question becomes, well, there you go, right? Todd says, was it a private search? And the answer is yes. Security took that on their own measure to search this guy. Now, if this guy's got a problem, can he sue us, the police department? No, there's nothing against us, but he may want to try to sue this casino civilly. I don't think it goes anywhere, but when you look at that, it was a private citizen search, and we can absolutely do so. So this brings us to a case here, to this United States versus Bowers, and yeah, luckily I've got a shirt on tonight, or it's going to be the same dude in the mirror there or in the screen, right? Ha, right. Sure. All right. So when we look at this case here, this guy Bowers here is the roommates went through the defendant's photo album and found child pornography and summoned the police, who also viewed this album. So, they find it, they look at this stuff here, and they call the cops, say, "Hey, look, here's what we found. What do you think? Are we good?" G2G again. Yep. Right. And we're good, right? The roommates were acting as a private citizen. Okay. They found this stuff and they handed it to him, and we viewed the album. We'll talk about the limitations to that in just a little bit here. But it was not a Fourth Amendment search when it looks, towards us here. And it's kind of interesting. We talked about, a private search, can be no matter how unreasonable it is. There's a case out there. The guy is burglarizing a house. All right. Committing a felony crime, burglarizing a home. And he's going through the stuff and he's picking through the shelves and doing whatever he's got to do and putting stuff in his bag. And he's probably got the little, the black and white stripes on and the little mask I picture, right? That's what burglars look like. And he's going through the home and he comes across a book, and he opens it up and there are pictures of child pornography inside that book. And this guy says to himself, this is how I picture it. Self, I'm kind of a terrible person, because where I'm at right now, I'm sitting in somebody's home stealing their stuff. I broke the glass window, I broke the glass door to get in here. So, not a good person, but I'm not this kind of a bad person, right? Child pornography is where I draw the line. That is uncalled for. So, he takes the book, probably picks up a couple of things on the way out, and he leaves. Well, it's on his mind. He's like, so he takes it to the police department, says, "Hey, I was burglarizing this house, and here's what I found. Yeah, I know I'm admitting that I'm burglarized the house and whatever. If I got to pay up for that, I will." So again, even though committing a burglary to obtain this child pornography and they hand it over to us, can we take it and use it as evidence against that homeowner? You guys are too good, right? Too good. Exactly, right? Yes, we can. No matter how unreasonable. It's pretty unreasonable, right? It's committing a felony crime and doing so, but we can still take that and use it against him. So we'll talk about this a little bit more here, but now, when does a private search become a government search? And there are two parts to it, right? Two parts to these private searches becoming government. One, the police direct, participate, and encourage them to do something. And the person is acting on our behalf. They're doing it for us, right? We say, "Hey, will you do this for me?" And they said, "Sure thing, here." And now everybody to pause for a half second here. Tell me how cool this new slide is, huh? I mean, that's pretty badass. Let's see how the accuracy, the decent, pretty decent shooting on the targets, right? A little bit of left off there, but pretty dang cool slides. So I love what our guys are doing for us here. So those are two parts, right? Police direct, participate, encourage, and they're acting on our behalf. So what does that look like? What does that mean, really? Essentially is that we should not direct private people to do things that the officers, we cannot do ourselves. Okay, that's when it becomes the problem there. Like Patricia says, what do we got here? Yeah, groovy. Yeah, it's definitely groovy for sure. I'm digging it, man. All right. So, how about this here? A search occurred when a. Oh, hang on a second here. I got some funky stuff going on my screen. A search occurred where a detective requested a motel manager to seize certain items in a motel room. What do we think about that? Hey, manager, I want you to go in there and get some stuff for me. What do you think? Negative, no go, not good. Nope. Right? Yeah, are we clearly directing them to do something that we can't do? Yeah. And when they do it for us, that's going to be a problem. So this case here, United States versus Hardin, essentially says here, screen here. A search occurred where a police officer asked a landlord to enter the tenant's apartment to see if he was there. And again, this is following into that creating them to be in our agent, right? Go in there and do something for me. We're encouraging them to participate, and they're doing it on our behalf. So clearly, when we look at this case here, that it was a search, right? And they are agent here. We look at this case here is a tow truck operator here. And the officer, a search occurred where an officer asked a tow truck driver to search an arrestee's impounded vehicle at the tow yard. So again, we're asking a private citizen to do something on our behalf. Now, this one, we've had questions come up about this one here is, what if you had, the automobile exception, probable cause to search that thing? Okay, that's one thing, but do we really want our tow truck drivers out there gathering evidence for us? Anybody have some chain of custody issues or some concerns about that? Yeah, no, let's not do that, right? Again, that's that encouragement, that's that participation we keep talking about, and them doing it on our behalf that we want to stay away from. All right. This one here, a search occurred where police provided false information. Sorry, I'm reading ahead here to medical personnel to induce them to perform an invasive search of a person's rectum. We can't make this stuff up, people. This happened. Look at the date, 2014, not that long ago. And we are providing false information to essentially turn a medical personnel into our agent to perform an invasive search of someone's rectum. Rectum damn near killed him, right? Now, you just can't, yeah, Ninth Circuit, right? You just can't make this stuff up. But it's good conversation for sure. But damn, right? Let's not do that, all right? The United States versus Reed case is another good example of this when the police were present while an employee searched a hotel room and agreed to be a lookout during the search. So you kind of picture this one here. They're gonna, go do a search, and we are, saying, all right, you go in there, you take a look around, and I've got your back. All right, I'm gonna stand here at the door, make sure nobody shows up, make sure that the person that is renting your room right now is not coming back. So, sounds like a good plan. Sounds like a good plan. Let's go do it. Who wants to go do that? No. Nope. Yeah, lots of no's, lots of nopes, right? No, thank you. All right. Yeah, exactly. Are we, in directing them? We're participating in it. And we've created them as an agent of us, right? They're doing this. We're actively, looking, as their lookout and doing so. Let's not do that kind of stuff here. In this case here, it's like an off-duty police officer working overtime at a nightclub. And I know there's a lot of different variations across the country as far as the rules when you can. Do some of these overtime gigs and some searches that come with it, and sorry, not searches, but your role as either security guard or as police officer out there. So that's something you're gonna have to kind of pay attention to. But in this particular case here, the officer working overtime at a nightclub ordered a patron to keep his hands up while security guard patted him down and found drugs. So, it's one thing to be there as a police presence to, hopefully deter crime, to make arrests if need be in doing so. But most of the time, we are not an active participant in what's going on. Security, however, like for the venue or like the Sphere here in Las Vegas, I got the chance to work there overtime once or twice, and they're doing their thing, right? They're wanding people, they're running people through metal detectors, and they're doing whatever their policy is there. Fine. But if we now take an active part in this over here and we walk over and say, hey, put your hands up and you pat them down. Well, are we clearly acting as a police officer in doing so? And is this now creating them as a government agent type of situation? What do you guys think? Keep your hands up while this guy shakes you down, man. Especially what we're standing there, we've got what? Our cop badges on, our police uniform on there, and we're directing them to do something. Now, for us to do it, we've got to have what? Reasonable suspicion that they're what? Armed and dangerous, right? So this created them being a pat or a search, right? Pat down was a joint venture between private security and law enforcement and violated the Fourth Amendment. We have this active role in it and bringing them in and kind of directing them to do something for us creates that relationship we're talking about. However, if the courts find that the private person would have done the same search without police direction, the evidence may come in. So, we look at this as there's, some things that, we can work, do as prosecutors can work on for us here. And, looked at it, if it would have happened anyway, then that could be something that comes up for argument in that, looking at that same search. But when we look at something like this, police asked a hotel housekeeper to separate defendant's trash from other hotel rooms. No search since the trash would have been removed anyway. So that's kind of what we're talking about here. If it would have happened anyway, then you can look at that and say, okay, well, the trash would have been taken out anyway, and therefore we can use that evidence. Max says here, where's the line of being a private person when working off-duty jobs? Good question, Max. So when you look at this, it's kind of the capacity that you're there. All right. Are you there wearing your uniform with your badge and working in a police capacity, essentially like you would while you're at work, then clearly you're a police officer. Now, if you are off duty, especially if you're not wearing uniform, and truly your role is as a security guard with all the measures that come with just being a security guard, I think there's an argument that that's your role. But when we look at this, that this where it gets kind of convoluted is that blend, right? I'm a police officer, kind of working as security guard. I think there you go, Hans. Stay in your lane, right? Stay in your line, lane. Just know that if you take police action, and you're doing some sort of police thing, it's going to be measured as a police officer and what you're doing in that capacity. So you got to be justified in doing so. And I say a lot of places have policy kind of directing what you can and cannot do. If you're being paid by, not your agency and a private company or private business, really set the expectation of what your role is in that off duty. So hopefully it helps out a little bit there, right? Yeah, stay in your lane, copy fine line. Yeah, especially in California. Just be real cognizant of what you're there to do and what your role is for sure. All right. So, however, when police ask private parties to do something that they would likely not have done, except for investigation purpose, a search has likely occurred. So we talked about, if it was going to happen anyway, all right, there's an argument for it here. But now we're asking them to do something that they most likely weren't going to do anyway. That encouragement we keep talking about, that's when we're really getting into that road of somebody being our agent. So a dog alerted on a UPS package and police encouraged UPS to open it. Despite this fact that UPS could open the package independently, this was a government search. And we'll talk about this case Jacobson here in just a few minutes that involves FedEx. But yeah, UPS could do it as a private citizen. But the difference here is we encouraged it, right? We encouraged them to do something that they doesn't seem like they were going to do anyway. So we changed, we altered the course into what they're going to do. That is going to be an issue. Also, the Fourth Amendment also applies if the private person tells the cops to search. So we look at a case like this where, in this one, a girlfriend told the cops that they could search her boyfriend's closet. Okay, well, here in this, she didn't have the common authority to do so. She didn't live there. She didn't have the ability to give that search component there. And when we look at this, they basically said this was a government search. The cops participated. So, that's those kind of questions we need to ask at times. Do you have common authority over this? Because, would her boyfriend have been offended? She didn't live there, and then all of a sudden she's now snooping around in his closet and doing things that would, almost feel like offensive to this person. And if it's offensive to the person by the private citizen doing it, well, they don't have the authority to say we can't, right? So that just kind of falls in line with that, and that became a government search because she directed, we followed in suit, and didn't have the authority to do so. So now it brings us to this cat out of the bag search that we talk about, and this is something you won't see cited by the Supreme Court case, but we here at Blue to Gold like to use this terminology because it just kind of makes sense, right? It kind of makes sense in the context of what we're talking about and this concept of doing so. And we'll talk about why we call it that here in just a few minutes. But it's built on this Jacobson case. And what was going on here? This was in the early 80s, I think 1981, somewhere in there. I believe in I know it's in Florida for sure. I think around Miami-ish somewhere. So you picture Florida in the 80s, all right? Miami Vice, okay? We're having a good time down there. And this guy Jacobson was a drug dealer. And he was shipping dope through FedEx. Well, on this particular shipping package that was going through, something happened that box got damaged. And it was FedEx's policy that if a box gets damaged, they know that they could be on the hook for damaging this property. So their policy, open it up, see what's in it. Is it $1 million expensive heirloom in there that they might have to pay for? Or is it something that doesn't appear to be too expensive and it's easy fix for them? So the FedEx opens up this box and inside they find like these cardboard type tubes inside there and they open it up. Again, because it's damaged a little bit, they open it up and they find like four baggies or bags of white powdery substance. Well, why these FedEx guys knew what this white powdery substance believed to be cocaine was? Well, they lived in Florida in the 80s. I think it was mandatory to have cocaine. Not sure. So what they do is they put the baggies back together, they take the tubes. And they seal the box back up, right? They tape it back up and kind of preserve, put it back the way they kind of found it aside from the damage. And they call the DEA. DEA gets down there, the shows up, they tell them what they saw. And so the DEA cuts the box open. They pull out the tube that was in there. They see the white powdery substance that the FedEx employees did. And they did a field test on it to ensure that it was cocaine. And the joke we like to say around here is again, early 80s in Miami doing a field test for cocaine. What did that look like back then? It looked a little something like this, right? A little bit right here. Yep, that's the good stuff, my friend. That's the good stuff. So they did test it. They did find that it was field co cocaine. They do a controlled delivery. They end up arresting Jacobson, right? So we go to the Supreme Court, and Jacobson's like, all right, I don't have a problem with FedEx. That is what it is, right? Boxes get trashed, stuff happens here. And, I don't have a problem with FedEx. What I do have a problem with is the DEA, the government, coming back there and recutting open my box. When FedEx put that box back together, they regathered my privacy interest in that box. They put it back together. The shield of the Constitution's back there. And the courts looked at this, Supreme Court said, well, I don't know about that here. Essentially, when the FedEx opened it up and they revealed this white powdery substance, the cat was out of that bag. That expectation of privacy was eviscerated, diminished, gone, right? That expectation of privacy was gone. Right. Yeah. And Hans says the field testing says it was based on my training experience, right? Exactly. But that expectation of privacy is gone. You can't put that back. And that is where we get this cat out of the bag search idea. And again, this is something that, we talk about here at Blue to Gold. It's like that privacy interest is gone. All right. And where we get this from, this cat out of the bag search, from what I understand, goes way back to like captains of ships, or back in the pirate times, or whatever it may be. And if the crew got out of line, they had this cat of nine tails that would come out, kind of a weaponry type device here, and to keep the crew in line, the cat would be out of the bag. And if you guys have seen it, right, the beatings will continue until morale improves, right? And that was kind of the idea back then, that oh man, the cat's out of the bag, we don't want this happening to us here. And that's what we're talking about with this Jacobson case here. Anybody see anything odd with that dude's hand? He was paying attention. I think it's cool, man. All right. High six, my friend. High six. There we go. Pow. High six. All right. So that's kind of the idea behind this idea of the cat out of the bag. And you'll also hear it maybe in lawyer speak and other things. It's called the silver platter doctrine. Like, here it is, right? I'm handing this evidence over to you on a silver platter. It's even got a little bow on the top of it here for good measure. And the results of that Jacobson case, as I said, no, your expectation of privacy was gone. Therefore, the search was lawful. Field testing, it was what they called de minimis. It was a minimal further search here. And Jacobson's on the hook for that cocaine inside that box. But yeah, there's our silver platter, right? Here you go. Take it and enjoy it. But when we talk about this private, excuse me, this, this there's two restrictions that come to this private search, right? One, we can't exceed that private search, right? How far did they go into whatever it was they were searching, or item, or what it was? And we must have lawful access to the item. So we'll talk about a couple of cases that really bring this together. So, and again, cool graphics, man. I'm digging them. They're groovy. All right. So, which brings us to the Crystal Inn. Kind of like, the tricking medical personnel into doing this. You can't make this kind of stuff up. Well, you can't make this one up either. All right. There were drugs found inside of a room inside the Crystal Inn. Can you believe it? I need everybody to take a sigh of, oh my gosh, right? Yeah, believe it or not. So here's what happened. All right. We had someone staying at the Crystal Inn. And while they stayed the night there, they're staying for a couple of days. They stayed the night, and again, I'm going to shock you all with information here. While they were staying there, there were bed bugs in that fine, fine motel that you see right here. Shocking, I know. It shocks the system a little bit, right? Drugs and bed bugs at the Crystal Inn. And so, this person's kind of offended. They feel like they should be getting a little more for their money at the Crystal Inn. So they call the manager and say, "Hey, got bed bugs in my room here. I'm heading out for a little bit. Can you please take care of that for me?" So they leave. Manager goes over, knocks on the door, no answer. They go in because that was what was asked. And manager goes inside there to look for the bed bugs and sees evidence of narcotics, paraphernalia, narcotics kind of scattered about on the dresser and throughout the room. Like, not in my hotel, right? Not in my hotel. So they leave, they call the police. Police show up, and the hotel manager says, "Hey, here's what's happened. I went inside here. You want to come on inside with me and take a look at these drugs?" Who's going inside with that manager to go take a look at those drugs? sending the bed bug detection canine, right? Will they sniff them out or they eat them? Nobody wants to go in, huh? I think we're making good headway in the world of blue to gold. You guys are just making good decisions out there. Good case law, right? And well, in this one, they did. All right, they go inside there. They find that they see the evidence in plain view, and we go from there. End up arresting some people. And here's what the court said, right? They said a landlord may tell the police about contraband he or she has observed, and the police in turn can use that information to apply, important word, for a search warrant. But that course of events does not create an exception to the warrant requirement, stressing that the United States Supreme Court has never extended the doctrine. We're talking about Jacobson here, right? To home searches, and we likewise decline to expand the doctrine in that way. So when we look at this, is this a cat out of the bag search? When we look at it, I mean, sure, the manager saw it. So that expectation of privacy is gone. But what is the issue here? What don't we have when we talk about replicating these private citizen searches? Yeah, Matthew says get a search warrant, right? Yeah, warrant, right? Exactly. We need paper in hand because we don't have that other part. We don't have that lawful access. And the manager doesn't have the ability to give us the authority to enter the room under these circumstances here. How about this one? All right, see if you guys are paying attention. Manager of a storage facility entered defendant's unit and discovered evidence of a bank robbery. Police were called and saw evidence, but also viewed a film and took fingerprints. All right, let's break this one on a couple pieces here. So the manager goes in the storage facility and sees evidence of a bank robbery. Are we good under cat out of the bag going into the storage facility? That's the first part of the question I'll ask. Going into the little storage facility to see what the manager saw. Are we good? I can sing the Jeopardy song. I'd sing it, right? Okay, a couple things, couple yeses, couple noes, yeses, noes, couple yeses, noes here. All right, so let's talk about the first part of this here. It's a storage facility, which means it is a container. Okay, it's a container. It is not the domicile. It is not the castle. It is not the residence. So good with the entry, right? Good with the entry into that. It's kind of like a backpack, okay? A storage system. But what about the second part? Also, viewed a film and took fingerprints. So, again, kind of like we talked about the phone booth earlier. Maybe there's some younger cops out here. We're talking about film. And like film was something that you put in the camera. You got like 12 or 36 if you're a high roller, and how many exposures you got. And there was a film that you could look at and see the exposures in there. How do you guys feel about that part of it? No good, no good, right? Nope. Exactly, right? No good for sure. Okay. Yeah, because now that's taking it further, right? The manager had not looked at that film and did not see that. So viewing that evidence was not a viewing the evidence. So walking in the storage facility, not a search. But viewing the film and taking fingerprints was an illegal search. Okay, that we went a little further than what was allowed before. So that's where it changes the game, right? All right. So how about this one here? Geez, I'm talking too much here. All right. So how do you have the phone? In this case, basically, a guy and a girl are dating. Right? They don't live together. They're not cohabitants. She doesn't have any common authority of his stuff here. But she's going through the phone. Right? She's going through her boyfriend's phone, kind of plinking around inside there, and. Kevin says, what if they're living in the storage unit? All right, I think maybe if it is an argument that it is a domicile of some sort, then maybe there's an argument that it was their home right or not. There could be a trespassing issue, but maybe everyone's castle is their own. So they're dating, she's messing around on the phone, and is trying to she's messing around with it. And while she's going through this, she finds pictures, naked pictures of a very young girl. It turns out to be her daughter, right? Her daughter, her boyfriend's got nude pictures of her on her phone. She's obviously upset about that, and she accuses her boyfriend, confronts him, he takes the phone, he leaves, and he goes, takes the phone, throws the phone in his car, and he takes off. And excuse me one second, real quick. Sorry. Hello. Oh, sorry. Geez, sorry. So the plumber's coming to my house because, as Cousin Eddie said it, shitter's full. So sorry about that. All right. And so the cops show up. They're outside, and she says, "Hey, I found some pictures of my daughter on here." And the cop says, "Do you have the phone? Okay, do you have the phone?" And she says, "No, but I know where I can get it. Give me one second, please." Haley, Haley, answer my phone, please, or call back. Thank you. All right, because we're all family here, I guess you guys are the best, right? So she says, "No, but I can go where I get it." So she walks over, she goes into his car and gets it. She gets the phone and she starts messing with it, and she's trying to find the pictures, but she can't. She's like, "I don't know how I found them in the first place. They're in here somewhere," and she hands it over to the cop. Well, the cop starts looking through them in here, and he can't find them either. Kind of a whew thing here. Best practice? No, not the best practice, right? So, what if, the issue here is, are we replicating the search that she did? And the answer is going to be no, because she told the cops, "Hey, I don't really know where I found these. I was just deep in the phone here, and I don't know. I'm not sure how I came across these here." So when the cop starts going through this and looking at these things, that could be an issue for us because we couldn't replicate that search. And I'm going to tell you, when it comes to these digital devices and big cases here, best practice is to what? Get paper, right? Get paper, or again, find somebody that's got, the authority to give it. Or if there's an exigency in there and you're worried about losing data or evidence on that phone, that's one thing. But, big cases like this, always think about that. All right, which brings us to a restaurant manager. All right, this guy tells the employees, "Hey, stay out of my office. All right, I don't want you in my office. Don't mess around there, especially when I'm not around." Well, they went in there one day to watch TV or do something in there, and they turn on the little TV. And essentially, there's a closed caption feed into the women's restroom. And they're like, "What the hell is this?" So they look at some of the stuff. There's a USB. They plug it in and they watch two or three or four videos that's like a motion activated of women using the restroom at this restaurant. So they're highly offended by this. They take it to the police and they say, "Here's what we see, what we got." And the cops look at those same, let's say, three videos. Are we going to be good? Yes. Yep, right? Because, yeah, again, they were specific about where they found the videos and what they saw. And the cops did nothing but, again, replicate that search. We'll talk about something called substantial certainty here in just a couple of minutes. But, we replicated that same search and we had the lawful access to it. Here, same thing. There's child pornography on this hard drive in file ABC. Okay. And it's brought to us. Can we look in file ABC? The answer is yes. We can replicate that search. We might want to be cautious if there are other files on there and the person's like, "I didn't look anywhere else. This is only where I looked." Replicating that same search when it comes to these. And here's what they said out of this Rand case here. When a private party provides police with detect evidence obtained in the course of a private search, the police not avert their eyes. Right? They don't expect us to turn away and shield ourselves from this information. Rather, the question becomes whether the police subsequently exceeded the scope of the private search. Did we replicate what they already saw? And if the answer is yes, we are good to go, right? So it goes on to say, we talked about this, searching digital vices under this doctrine should be discouraged and used as a failsafe. I mean, these are big cases, serious cases that should lead to prison time. So, like I mentioned, the better approach is exigency, common authority, consent, or search warrant. Use these things here because this is going to trial on here. People are going to be hopefully going to prison for a long time. We want to make sure that we are dialed as possible. Not saying you can't do it, but just think about that, take that into consideration. This one again, man, crooks. I don't know. I don't. I'm glad that we only have to be a little bit smarter than these crooks out there as cops. This guy here, he's at the Hy-Vee, he's doing a little shopping. He leaves his phone behind, and on his home screen, his opening screen is child pornography. Well, is left behind. The manager of the store looks at it, try to figure out maybe who this phone belongs to, and it's right there, right? Calls the cops. They come out there, and they same thing. They look at the home screen. They replicate that search on this, and is this a cat out of the bag? Yeah, this cat's out of the bag, right? And again, I just some of the stuff I can't comprehend. I really do. I did this for a long time, but I still am troubled by some of the crooks' behavior out there, right? This guy here, he's a computer repairman, and he's going through somebody's computer doing the repairs at their request, and he comes across, evidence of child pornography, and essentially, he calls the cops and. The cops saw several thumbnails and directed the repairman. He put these in gallery mode so we could see a little bit better what's going on. And, what do you think about this? Are we going to be good to go on making him put these into gallery mode? Most people don't like it. Most people don't like it. I got lots of no's on here. Well, here's what they said. All right. They said that this was not a Fourth Amendment search. I think that most of you guys said no on this one, but I think what the idea in the court in this one here is it wasn't revealing any more information that was already been revealed. Like the images were already there and visible. They just wanted to not want to see them better, but had a better gauge of what's going on. So I don't think was an any deeper search than had already taken place. So they said that was not a search, and they upheld that making it to gallery mode. All right, so let's move this into substantial certainty. What if we search past what has already been seen? What if we go a little bit further than the private citizen has already done? And this is this idea called substantial certainty. Essentially, it's even if police exceed the private search, it may be saved if there's a substantial certainty police knew the evidence was similar to other evidence seen. So basically, okay, yeah, I know that based on what I know so far, I know I could tell a judge, hey, I with confidence I can say that there is more of the same in this same area, container, or whatever it may be. So. A case here says, a mother found child pornography on a digital device and gave it to police. Okay. This police then searched the same device and viewed images that were not viewed by the mother. How you guys feel about that one? We're talking about substantial certainty. So it's a digital device. There's you're finding evidence of child pornography on there. How do we feel about that one? No. Nope. All right. Interesting. Well, here's what they said. They said that it was not a Fourth Amendment search because the police was substantially certain what other images were. So again, it's a device that has child pornography on it. And if there's a rationale behind that, most people don't keep, their child pornography with the family photos. Right, the JCPenney photo album pictures are usually not commingled together. There's that you could be substantially certain that this same stuff is inside there. Or how about something a backpack, right? You search somebody's or roommate searches a backpack and it's got four layers in that backpack, and the roommate searches the outer zipper. and they see narcotics inside that outer zipper. And then they bring it to you, and they say, "Hey, I only searched this outer bag. It's got narcotics in here. I didn't look anywhere else." And this, could we, are we absolutely certain that there's more drugs in the rest of that backpack? I'd say no, right? I'd say no is going to be our answer because you have to be sure of it. But when something's on a digital device like that, I think there's a much better argument that that's the similar type things in there versus some other type things here. Versus like this case here. An ex-girlfriend entered the boyfriend's house and took several discs. So again, we're looking at this one being back 2001. So we're talking about maybe, floppy disk type things. She searched one of them and found child pornography on that and handed all of them to the police. The police then searched all of the discs and found more child pornography. Well, are we absolutely sure, substantially certain that there's other child pornography on those other discs? No, nope. And that's kind of the idea behind this. So they searched this. They did find more evidence of child pornography on these other discs, but when we look at what the court said here is, there was no substantial certainty that other discs contained child pornography and the evidence was suppressed. So this guy did get convicted. Are we good on the first disc? The first disc that she looked at, are we good to replicate that under cat out of the bag? Yes. But there wasn't substantial certainty. So he didn't get convicted on all those other charges that was found on those other discs. But the one that she looked at, we replicated the search. We had lawful access to it. Evidence is coming in. So hopefully that kind of cleans up that substantial certainty. You got to know. I could tell a judge, I know with certainty that that information is what's on there. All right. So let's get to a couple takeaways from today. All right. The major takeaways, okay? Private citizen searches, no matter how unreasonable, are not Fourth Amendment searches, right? The Fourth Amendment protects people from the government and its agents, okay? And we talked about the agents here. We don't exceed that private search, okay? We can replicate that private citizen search, but we do not exceed that private search. And like we talked about, is getting a warrant for digital and big cases. That's just best practice, right? I'm not going to sit here and teach you to say, go snooping through people's phones, even though it's been there. Best practice, right? Best practice is get paper on these big cases out there. And you don't have to overcome that private citizen search argument out there. So there's our takeaways on this. That is where we're at for this. Now, if you like what I'm doing here, if you like the webinar, give me some feedback. I appreciate you all. It's always a lot of fun. The chat, we appreciate the heck out of it here. Love you guys out there. You're the best. Oh man, somehow the little hearts are flying up the screen. Oh, it warms my soul, right? Also, if you guys like what we're doing as these classes, please leave us a review out here. Again, we take this into consideration. We want to build all this stuff for you all out there. We want you guys to get it right every single time. We love doing it. So please, if you get it, do so.